here, but our time is limited, so we're going to do virtual canning, but you will be able to have a visual. When I learned to can, probably 15 years ago, I had to teach myself. I could not find anyone to help me, and I would have done anything just to see a visual, just to have an idea of what it actually looked like. But if you don't, if you have to teach yourself, there's a wonderful book that you want to be sure and get. I call it the Bible of Canning, the Ball Blue Book. Write this down if you're taking notes. It will help you to know how to can almost any type of food, of produce. The Ball Blue Book, B-A-L-L. Mine's probably a way old edition. They put them out, probably 40 or 50 editions of them have come out. It is probably going to be the most conservative way, safest way to begin canning. When you start canning, you're going to have all kinds of people tell you, well, my grandmother did it this way and my aunt did it that way, and they're going to have all kinds of versions. My advice is when you start, if you have not canned before, go by the conservative methods first until you're more experienced, and then you may want to try some of the other methods. Now, when we talk about canning, you heard about dehydrating this morning, and we want to really discuss how to plan for a year's supply. Laura talked about starting out with 72 hours and then a week's worth, having that on hand, and then a month, and then 3 months, 6 months, and finally working up to having a year's supply, which is just ideal, because when you're at the end of the growing season, harvest time, you're not going to have another harvest until 1 year later. So that is why we would really advise that you get 1 year's supply. If anything interrupts the system that you're used to depending upon during that time, let's say there's a harvest season and then something happens and disrupts the system, you cannot get food at a grocery store. You want to have thought ahead, and you want your family to be able to eat during that whole time next to, right up to the next growing season, so until your garden is producing the next year. And so that, in some places, that can be as long as 10 months. Now, if you have a growing season of 6 months, then you would only need to plan for 6 months' time. But one thing you want to do is start, you want your wheels to start turning. Be thinking about what would it take for my family to have 1 year's supply of food. Now, it would depend upon the size of your family. It would also depend upon the growing season, as I said. So I'm just going to give you a little scenario, and this hopefully you can apply to your own situation. I want to have a variety of ways that my food is stored. We're going to show, we're going to focus a little more on canning this afternoon. We did dehydrating this morning. We're also wanting to mention root cellars. Does anybody, everybody here know what a root cellar is? Mm-hmm. It's something our grandparents knew well, because it's using the temperature of the earth to preserve your food, to keep it in a fresh condition. Good keepers, the things we think of as good keepers, citrus foods, potatoes, apples, cabbage, carrots, onions, garlic, beets, root vegetables, all of those are good keepers, and in the right conditions, you can keep them for many weeks. In fact, potatoes you can actually keep up until the next time that you need to plant them. And so, think about root cellars. There is a wonderful book, The Bible of Root Cellaring, and if you want to write this down, it's called Root Cellaring. It's a simple name, Root Cellaring, C-E-L-L-A-R-I-N-G, by Mike and Nancy, D-U-B-E-L is the last name. And if you need the ISBN number and all, you can come back to our table at the back, and I'll be glad to give it to you. It's about $14.95, and I'm sure you can get it online. So you want to think about root cellars. If you want to see what one actually looks like on our DVD, Urban Danger, we show a family who has a root cellar, and he's going down into the root cellar. If they can get to it through their home, sometimes root cellars are outdoors and have to go outside. But when you're looking for country property, look for something that has potential to have a root cellar that's easily accessible. And in the book, Root Cellaring, you're going to find all kinds of ways to store things in as close to a fresh condition as possible. All right, another thing you want to do is be learning how to grow things four seasons out of the year. There is an organic gardener named Elliot Coleman, E-L-I-O-T-C-O-L-E-M-A-N. Elliot Coleman is well known for four seasons gardening. He lives in Maine. He makes a business out of growing food four seasons out of the year, and he has put out wonderful books on it. Get some of those because you want to be able to have some fresh food all year long. Also, if you're going to be your own grocery store, then you want fresh, and then you want your root cellar. That's as close to fresh as you can get. It's something that is stored, but it also has not been processed. Then you want to have some dehydrated food because that is going to be your highest nutrition level. 95 to 97% of the nutrition is retained when you dehydrate. So that is excellent to know. Some of us aren't as quite as comfortable cooking meals with dehydrated. I have dehydrated foods, but I haven't gotten to the point yet where I feel like I can just use that for my meal source. And so I also like to have canned food. It's wonderful when you're making Italian foods or whatever, just to go out. We call it go to the grocery. Go out to the utility room where the shelves are with all your canned goods and get some Italian sauce that you made the last summer, or some Mexican sauce, or, you know, salsa, or whatever it is that you may want. There's some things that I really like in the canned state. So canning is kind of a lost art, so we're just going to kind of give you a little review today of visuals, and then if you get the ball blooper, you can teach yourself. I'm sure there's even tutorials online, but there are two ways of canning foods. This is a pressure canner. A lot of people are afraid of pressure canners, but I don't think there's anything to be afraid of if you're logical and use it wisely and are careful to let it cool down on its own. I don't think you're going to have trouble. I never have. And then this is a water bath canner, and it's just what it sounds like. A water bath is something where you fill it up probably about two-thirds full with water. There's a little rack in the bottom. This one has a rack that high, it doesn't have to be that high. But what you're going to do with the water bath, and Laura is over here preparing some peaches and some nectarines, and we're going to just kind of show you in a few minutes what you do, but the water bath is going to surround your jar with 212-degree water, a boiling water bath. And this will stop the enzyme action, and it will also kill off bacteria that might be in the fruit. Now, fruits and tomatoes you can do in a water bath because they are acidic. Acidic things do not, bacteria doesn't grow as easily in them. So 212 degrees is plenty warm to take care of that. So you're going to do a boiling water bath with all your fruits and vegetables. You want to, here's some pears that were done. No, this is mango. You're going to need a liquid in here because what you're wanting to do is replace the air that is in there. So I put my mango pieces in here, and then I use concentrated apple juice. Some people just use water, and that certainly, you can do that. It's not a problem. Our family has found, though, that if we just use water that does not have anything sweet in it, it dilutes the sweetness of the fruit, and then the fruit no longer is as sweet as it originally was. So we like to have something as natural as possible. There are raw sugars and things like that you can use, but the ideal thing is to have your own orchard, your own apple trees, make your own apple juice, and use your apple juice to can things. So this is some mangoes done in apple juice. Now, that's a boiling water bath. And the book that I told you about is going to tell you, you could look up, let's say we're going to do peaches. Look up peaches in the index. It's going to tell you you can do it in a boiling water bath. You're going to already know that because it's a fruit, but it's going to confirm that in your mind. And then it will tell you how many minutes you need to let it be in that boiling water bath. You don't start counting the minutes until the water starts boiling. And so you have the water, I like to have the water almost boiling when I put it in. And Let's see, Laura's got some things here, and we've got some apple juice. We have some pineapple juice that we used this morning for the dehydration. We could certainly use pineapple. You can dilute it if you want, or you can have it full strength. Now, actually, I'm going to use this funnel, because that's a much better way to do it, and I won't have spillage. These are some peach halves. You don't have to peel the peaches if you don't want to. I'm going to fill it up to about within about a half an inch of the top. And once again, that book that I told you about is going to tell you how much head space to leave. And that means how much space on the very top that will not have any liquid in it. This is something that a lot of times when I'm giving classes, it's mostly ladies and there'll be a few men. And the men find this part very fascinating. I had one man that just couldn't understand, couldn't believe what was happening, because it's kind of a, I don't know if it's chemistry or physics, but what happens is quite interesting. Wipe the top here so that you don't have any kind of residue that might keep it from sealing. Then, does everyone know what, this is a pint jar. Usually you're going to use quartz, probably. Here's a lid. This is called a lid. And this is the ring. The lid goes on, and you'll want to heat your lids up in water, bring them to boiling, and then just shut it down so that they're sitting in hot water. What did I put in? Oh, that's some apple juice. Okay, so I've got on my burner at home, I'm going to have all these lids in some water. Just have the water cover them, bring it to a boil, turn it off. And now I'm filling my jars up with various things. And here's some more that we'll fill. Usually you're going to use this little. There's several gadgets that are very helpful. And you may want to get them. You can find them at a hardware or at Walmart. Very inexpensive. I'm going to dilute this a little bit with water. Get it within half inch of the top. Okay. Now, I have these hot lids sitting on my stove. And this is a gadget that's kind of neat. It's a little magnet that I can just go like that and it'll pick up my lid. So I put it down here and I just place it on there. Everything does not have to be sterile. It needs to be clean. And warm. Why warm? Because what happens when you put something cold in something that's very warm?
Crack.
Sometimes things can crack, glass can crack. So you want everything to be warm. Of course, today we don't have that option. But you want your jars, I wash my jars and then I put them in my oven on warm, just to keep them warm. Other people may put them in their dishwasher and leave them warm. But so everything wants to be warm and clean. Why do we not have to have it sterile? Because the food is not sterile that we're putting in there. It's going to be sterilized as we process it, but at the time that we put it in, it isn't. So everything just needs to be very clean and warm. So I'm going to put some lids, get me another lid here, put it on here. This is a wide mouth jar. They're becoming more and more popular, especially if you're doing things that are larger items, halves, like halves of my peaches. Then this is a regular mouth. They're slightly cheaper, and I think it's good. So here we're going to get, usually on a day that you're doing this, you're going to just be doing one thing at a time. You're not going to do a variety like we're doing today, but we just kind of want to give you, whet your appetite. This is a little half pint jar. They make it in a little chubby size now. And this is a half pint here, too. So they come in different shapes. And you'll find for your family that you'll choose whatever you use most. Like for jams and all, I make huckleberry jam in the summer because we have huckleberries growing on our property. And they're very prized in our area. They go for about $50 a gallon sometimes. And so I go pick huckleberries and they look a lot like a blueberry. And I make jam and I like to make them either in the small or in the pint. Now, when I'm doing peaches at home, I'll usually do quartz, sometimes pint. Okay, we've got our lids on here, but we've got to have something that holds the lids on. So that's what the ring is for. You don't need the ring for any other purpose than just to hold it on long enough to go through the processing. And when you put the ring on, don't tighten it super tight. It's medium tight. Why? Because I want this air that's still in here to escape during the processing. That's what's going to create my vacuum. Okay. Yes,
Laura. When I make applesauce is a little bit stickier, of course, than all this fruit. And you have to make sure you really keep those tops of those jars cleaned off. And if you fill a whole bunch of jars and then you go back a little bit later, you're going to have applesauce kind of stuck on there. So you've got to make sure you really clean that rim off good so that you get a good seal.
Oh, yes, thank you very much. Those are kind of little things that you just always want to remember. We're going to talk a little more about pressure canners in a minute, but we're just doing our fruits right now. So, okay, we're ready. These are not the wide ones, so we'll get the smaller ones. And maybe I don't have another one. Well, we'll just pretend that was in here. Alright. There we go. And we're going to put our ring on. We're not going to tighten it super tight because I want something special to happen when I put it into my water bath. Here's already.
Do you have boiling water in your canner or is it just hot water?
I have found that I'll bring it to a boil and then I'll shut it off because I don't want it boiling when I put my jars in. I want to do everything possible to keep from having any jars break. And it's just too furious when all the boiling is going on. So now I've got hot water. That is probably up to about here. You may have to take a little out because if I'm gonna fill it up with jars, of course it's gonna display the space. So I need to have these are some absolutely necessary things. And I'm going to lift my jar and put them in here on the little rack.
Yeah. When I was canning as a kid, too, with my mom, I broke a lot of jars sticking in really hot water because the substance in my jars wasn't hot enough, and then I stuck it in really hot water, and so I had a lot of cracking. So I use really hot tap water to start out with.
But
that takes a little longer, though, right?
Yes, it takes a little longer to build it up, and I guess my theory is that I want to process it just as short a time as possible, but
okay.
I think you're right.
Just for the nutrition, to keep the nutrients as much as possible.
Okay, mine is just about full here with these little jars. So then I'm going to look in the Ball Blue Book, and like I said, typically you're not going to be doing blueberries, nectarines, and peaches all at the same time. You're going to be doing, let's say, peaches. So you're going to look up peaches. You're going to see how many minutes you need to do it at water bath, by a water bath for pints, because I'm doing pints today. Yes. The water must cover them. Think of the word bath, a boiling water bath. You're bathing those jars in water. And if the water does not cover the top by about an inch, you may not get a seal. That's most important. So then you put your timer on for 20 minutes or something like 20. We put our timer on, we put our lid on. Well, actually, we don't put our timer on until it comes to a boil. So if I put them in, it's not boiling, turn the heat up underneath and keep an eye on it. In 5 or 10 minutes, it'll be boiling. Then put your timer on, and I think in this case, it's going to be 20 minutes. At the end of 20 minutes, with a water bath, you don't have to wait like you do with a pressure canner. Just take the lid off. Don't put your face over the lid, over it, because there's going to be some steam. And you're going to take these out. And you want to put a cloth down on your counter like we have here. And you'll take them out, and something very interesting starts happening. Because while they were in here, when you have something that heats up, what does it do? It expands. It drives the air out. That's why we just want to tighten this super tight. We want it just medium tight. Tight enough to hold the lid on firmly, not so tight that it will not allow the air to escape. And sometimes if you've got it a little bit full, a little of the juice will escape too. That doesn't matter as long as you still get a seal. Okay, so we're going to take these out. Some things, I've had things start popping as I have them in the air taking them out, because what happens when you cool down something that is very hot? It contracts. But now we don't have any air in there. And so you can see, can you all see a little bump here? There's a little tiny bump on the lid. And that's going to be sucked in when that contracts, and you're going to hear a pop. Now, sometimes I've had things that I didn't actually hear the pop, but they were sucked in anyway. But a lot of things will make a loud popping sound, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of times when I'm panning a large amount of things, and let's say it's in the evening, and I have them all out on the counter, many, many jars, and then I go to bed or whatever, I'm doing something else, I'm in the kitchen, you just hear pop, 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 and it's a great feeling. You feel like you're really doing something for your family. Now, vegetables we have to do in a pressure canner. Why? They are not acidic. And so they need to be at a higher temperature. We're not going to use a water bath. We're going to use the pressure from the steam. So this, my particular canner here, is called the All-American Canner. The reason why we got this one is it has a metal-to-metal seal. It does not require a gasket. Everybody know what a gasket is? The rubber thing that makes the thing seal because it fills in the gap. Well, this one is machined so closely that this metal sits right next to that metal, and there is no gasket required. It is more expensive than many of the cheaper ones. My husband really wanted to get that because he didn't want to have to worry about gaskets breaking, getting lost, becoming brittle, and then you don't no longer have a pressure canner. Then all you have is just to use as a water bath. So this is a pressure canner, All-American Canner, and it is for vegetables. One of the ones you want to make sure you pressure can is green beans, because they're the ones that sometimes you hear stories about. The theory on the pressure canner is that you will get the temperature up to between 240 and 250 degrees, depending upon how many pounds pressure. Now, how do you know how many pounds pressure? Well, I know because I'll look in the blue book. I would not know on my own. So I look under green beans, and it says pressure can for 20 minutes at 10 pounds. Now, just put something away in your head that you don't have to remember, but just remember, if you're living in the mountains at a higher altitude, you may need to do a different pound than what it says. It'll tell you this in the blue book. If you're over 2,000 feet elevation, you're going to always do 15 pounds. Just tuck that away. It doesn't have to be something you have to remember, but if you're living in the mountains, it'll just change the way you can just a little bit. This is a weight gauge, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do what I call a raw pack. This is already canned, but when I do my green beans, they are not hot when I put them in. They're raw, and that's called raw pack. When you do like tomato sauce or something that you've been cooking on the stove and you can that, that's called hot pack. But this is a raw pack or cold pack. When I just put the green beans in here, then I add water. I put a little bit of Celtic salt, one of the more healthy salts in mine. You don't have to put salt. Nothing like that is necessary. But I put that in, put my lid on, put my ring on, use my tongs, put it in, put all my green beans in here. Then, with my particular canner, and what you need to do is just follow whatever your pressure canner instructions say. And on our DVD Urban Danger, we have a girl who shows canning green beans with her, I think it was a Miro canner that she had, and she got it for, I think she said, $10 or $20 at a yard sale, brand new in the box. So that was a deal. But this mine has a little arrow here, and it has a little mark here so that it always gets put in the same position. And I have about an inch and a half of water in the bottom of it. There's a little rack in it also. But every canner is a little different, so it's not so important that you have to know just how my canner does. Follow the instructions for the type you get. But on mine, we use these wing nuts, and we, from opposite sides, we do it up. So it's going to be very, very tight.
Right. So there's really not one that's faster than the other. It's just a different process.
Right. Because you'll, like, for instance, tomatoes, can be done either way. And you could pressure can tomatoes, and the instructions say 10 minutes. But when you do it yourself, you're going to find out that you're taking just about as long as the 45 minutes that are required in the water bath, boiling water bath, because it takes, like Laura said, it takes a while to build up the pressure, and then you want to let the pressure go down naturally. So we put our weight gauge on, we let it vent for the 7 minutes, put our weight gauge on. The weight gauge has little etched numbers in it, and I'm going to put it on 10, put it there. And most everybody has heard the rattle that a pressure cooker makes, haven't you, sometime in your life?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes up to that number of pounds, then you know you start your timing. So on the green beans, it's 20 minutes, so we put our timer on for 20 minutes. Once it starts rattling, when it finishes, when the buzzer goes off, we do not take this off. There is a lot of pressure in there. It's up to 240 degrees or so.
And
just go ahead.
You have to adjust the temperature on your stove to keep the pressure about the right thing?
Right. My instructions for my canner says it only needs to rattle 3 or 4 times a minute to keep up that same pressure. So rather than just beat it to death with a very high temperature going on, I put my temperature just as low as I can where it will still rattle 3 or 4 times a minute. Okay, then I've done it for my 20 minutes. All I do is turn off the stove. I don't touch a thing. I leave it right where it is, turn it off. I'm going to wait probably 30 minutes or so before it's ready to open. I think that's where people get in trouble when they had pressure cookers. They throw cold water on it, do different tricks to try to, you know, and they might have some trouble. So let's see. Let's see if we just covered most everything. I want Laura to cover, she's going to cover some more about storage. One thing you want to remember is wheat storage. Wheat will store for not only decades, but centuries. When they opened King Tut's tomb, there was wheat in there, and they sprouted it. And that's where they got it. If you've ever heard of Kamut wheat, K-A-M-U-T, came from King Tut's tomb, from what I understand. So under cool, dry conditions, wheat can store a long time. And wheatmontana.com is something to write down. They have an excellent wheat that has very high protein, very low moisture. They ship all over the country. Some Walmarts even carry it in the wheat berry form. If you get wheat to store, you're going to need a grain mill, because you're going to need to make flour out of it, unless you just want to eat wheat cereal that is the cooked berries. So you're going to want to get a grain mill, and Laura can tell you where to get a grain mill. A Country Living grain mill is the one that we think is the most heavy duty, and it would be Country, let me see what the website is. Well, we have comethethecountry.com is the place to get it. So that's a good place to get your Country Living grain mill.
Is that the manual one?
Well, it is a manual one. Country Living Grain Mill is a manual, but it also has a pulley on it that can actually be hooked to a bicycle. You can bicycle and grind your wheat, or the pulley can be hooked to a motor, so it's very versatile. Don't pay the full price for the motor. I think they want $300 or so for the motor. My husband got a motor for $40, and you have to make sure it has low RPM. So if you get to that point, email us, and we will tell you more about how to find a motor that has low RPMs. You want to keep all the nutrition in that wheat. You don't want to heat it up real high by a fast motor. Okay, I think we're just about out of time. Laura's going to share some about the Victoria strainer and also about storage. And just so you'll know, these are some things, just the size limit with canning. These are mangoes, this is pimento, oh well, it's not pimentos, it's red peppers, but they can be used just like pimento. They're delicious. Applesauce, apricot jam. This is a three-berry jam with raspberries, blueberries, and blackberries. This is some pears done in an apple juice. And then we saw the green beans, and these are nectarines and peaches and jam. So
we just kind of gave you here a sampling of three main ways, freezing and drying and then canning, and also storing. Nancy was talking about the cold storage, and I think every home should have a cold storage. I just think that should be built into the home, a little greenhouse on the side and a cold storage down underneath.
And did you know there's a list of just some of the things that you can store all winter? So you don't have to can them, you don't have to dry them, you just have to make sure that they're dry and not moist. Beets, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, carrots, celery, garlic, artichokes, onions, peppers, potatoes, squash, sweet potatoes, tomatoes, apples, grapes, oranges, and pears. And a lot of those I have kept for a good part of the winter, even into May. Sometimes I'm still making my applesauce in May if I didn't get it done in the fall, because I kept it in cold storage and it kept well. Sometimes, you know, the apples you don't feel like eating particularly. They may not be they're not as crisp and juicy as they were when you first picked them, but they're still great. You can make pies and crisps and applesauce and all that kind of stuff. And I have potatoes right now in my cold storage that are just perfect. I kept my cold storage about 32. Now the ideal is to have two cold storages, one that's humid and one that's dry. Your humid one, you want to keep more of your vegetables in that. They just last longer, they're preserved better. Your dry one, you want to keep your grains and your nuts and your legumes in that. So that's the ideal. But I've never had that luxury of having two cold storages yet. I'm hoping someday to have that. So I just have one room, and in my old home, I had a room that was kind of in the bottom of the house, in the corner, and I had a window in it. And so I would regulate the temperature with that window and keep it as cool as I could. It had air circulation through, which is good. You want that. And then in the winter when it got too cold, I had a little heater or sometimes just a light you can turn on just to keep it above freezing. They say 32 to 40 is the best temperature to keep your cold room at. And in the summertime, it gets up to 60. And most of the time by then, you've used up all that food from the winter that you were saving, your potatoes and your apples. So I kind of gauge it. I've got to make sure that I use up or give away or whatever my fresh food by the time the summer comes in and starts getting warmer. So it works pretty good. The one I have right now, I have a little fan in it. It's kind of in a corner of the garage where the sun comes around on the other side, so it keeps cool. So the other day it was 69 outside, and it was 36, I think, 38 in my cold room. So anyway, you just kind of want to keep that in mind. It needs to be dark. Cool, dry for the dry goods, ventilation, and then you want to inspect your stuff regularly. Take out the bad apples, the bad squash, so it doesn't infect the other stuff. One thing I want to show you real quick is about buckets. This, I do not believe, is food grade. This looks like from Home Depot. So you want to get food grade buckets. And this is where I store all my legumes and all my wheat and everything in these buckets, even your dried fruit and vegetables that you've dried, you can store in here. And it works great if you have problems with mice or anything like that, like we do in the country sometimes. You can put these in the garage or your cold storage, and nothing will get into them. They're great. But you want to get food storage buckets. The other thing that I've gotten is Mylar bags, and this even helps preserve the food longer. And you kind of rotate. So you get your food, and then you start rotating it. You use your older stuff, the newer stuff you're saving, and you just keep, as you're working on building up your store of food, you keep using the old food, getting new food, and rotating it that way. But anyway, I put these Mylar bags in my bucket, and I fill them up and try to get as much air out as possible. So you fill it up, I kind of shake the bag, I keep pouring in my wheat or my legumes or whatever it is, I keep shaking. And then I have my iron out there. Now you can get Ziploc ones, but I didn't want to pay the extra money. So I got these ones, and you just take your iron, and I put a board across my bucket here, and I put the this down across the board, and then I used the iron and just sealed it up, and then I left a little space here, and then I got as much air out as I could and finished sealing up the rest. Oh, before I sealed it though, I threw in my oxygen absorbers. And you can buy those the same place you buy your Mylar bags and your buckets. You get a packet of oxygen absorbers, and there are charts and lists online that will tell you how many oxygen absorbers you need for that particular thing. It's different for grains and legumes and things like that. So you put those in the bag first, and then you get as much air out as you can, you seal it with air, and it's kind of a big process. So I got tired of doing all the Mylar bags, so I did some with Mylar, and then some I just threw the grain right into the bucket, threw the oxygen absorbers on top, and whacked down the lid, because the lid has a gasket that helps seal it as well. You've done that too, right?
Yes, we used nitrogen.
Okay.
And that was a little more extensive, but we were living in the South at that time, so you know what happens in the South, there's bugs.
Now, I just wanted to quickly give you where I got my buckets. Quality Containers, and this is in Utah. And I'll give you the phone number, and if you don't catch it right now, just see me in the table on the back, and I can give you the information. But I bought mine at Quality Containers, 801, this is the phone number, 801-977-0770. And I bought a pallet at a time that had 120 buckets on it, and so I got a good deal. The buckets with the lid were $4.40. Now you can get buckets other places. You can get them at USA Emergency Supply, that's online. You can look them up. Their buckets are a little bit more. I think they're $6.14. But if you don't want to buy 120 buckets at the same time, I mean at one time, you'll have to pay a little bit more money. But if several of you go in at one time, you can get a better price. Uline, they have buckets as well, and you can go online and find them. They do a lot of cardboard boxes, but they also have buckets. And I have a few more, but those were the best prices that I found to get buckets and the Mylar bags and the oxygen absorbers.
Got a question here.
Comment.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a local place in Ontario, just past Ontario Mills Mall in Milken. It's called Honeyville Farms. They're out of Utah. They just opened last summer. And since people are local here, you can go there and buy all your buckets, oxygen absorbers, lids. Milken and 6th Street.
On 6th Street in Ontario.
And Milken.
What?
Milken and 6th.
Oh, Milken and 6th. Okay. And she's saying you can get buckets and Mylar bags and oxygen absorbers there. So,
one thing I want to mention, when wait 24 hours, then take the ring off. You will regret it if you don't. Because at this point, this one has already been processed. At this point, there is nothing going to happen. That thing is on and it's hard to get it off. So take it off, wash it, clean it, put it on your shelf and store it. It's good for a long time. Lose its nutrition the longer. Try to eat as much as you can, but save some for 3 years. With the pressure canner, when the buzzer goes off, let it sit. Keep checking that weight gauge. If you hear a rattle of any kind, there's still pressure in there. When it finally gets to where there's no sound coming out, pull the weight gauge off, then unscrew the lid or however your pressure canner works, undo it. Keep your face away, because it's something you can see. So keep your face away and undo it, and then take your tongs, and out comes your ring gauge.